and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Aziz Galani, managing director of Mercury Fund, a Houston venture capital firm that closed its fifth fund last September to the tune of $160 million. Aziz joins the show today to share some trends in both the software and VC worlds, as well as why he's optimistic about his hometown of Houston and its developing innovation ecosystem. Aziz, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
It's long overdue. I can't believe we haven't had you on the show before, so I'm excited to catch up. So just to begin, for those who aren't familiar with you, give us a little bit of your background and specifically where your interest in technology came from and how it evolved into a career in venture capital.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Clear Lake, which is just southeast of Houston. It's down where the Johnson Space Center is. And kind of like, it almost sounds made up because it doesn't seem real. But while I was in high school at Clear Lake High School, down in Clear Lake, I used to ride my bicycle to a local startup and I used to intern there like after school. So that was probably my first introduction. I worked for AMT Media Technologies. They were working on digitizing the manuals for Mission Control and then putting them all in PDF format so that they didn't have to carry around these manuals all the time. This is back in the old Stone Ages when everything was still on paper. I went to UT. I got an MIS degree. I paid my way through UT by working for a software company called Lotus. For those of you who are old enough to remember, they were the company that was responsible for spreadsheets and email. I did a turn over at Lotus. And then I spent after I graduated from UT Austin, I spent the next six, 7 years kind of rotating through every job you could probably have in the enterprise software stack. I used to make software. I used to sell software. I used to buy software on behalf of a large public company. I kind of did all the different stops you could in that enterprise software ecosystem. And then after I did all of those things, I went to business school. And while in business school, I got connected over to the guys over at Mercury Fund. That was back in 2007. And I've been working here since 2008.
That's amazing. So to no one's surprise, at Mercury, you focus on software.
Yeah, there you go.
Cloud and data science and anything within that space, which are very topical and dynamic technologies these days. So what makes a company in that space really stand out to you and to Mercury?
Man, we actually once a year over here at Mercury, we sit down together with all of our partners and we talk about, hey, for the next, for the next investment cycle, what are the focuses we have in terms of what makes companies really stand out? So what we have found is obviously these are all companies that are at the cutting edge from a technology point of view. They're all doing new and novel things, but that's a lot of startups, frankly. And so, we kind of think about the current software investing cycle as being very focused on companies that have truly achieved product market fit and are showing large customer adoption. At the end of, let's call it 2022 and through 2023, I was leading our investments in a company here in Houston called RepeatMD. And while looking at that investment, man, it really made me recalibrate a lot of my thoughts in terms of what product market fit really meant. Because over at RepeatMD, we had customers that were so eager for the service that they were literally buying into products while we were still making them. And that's a pretty unique situation. In a lot of ways, I'm super focused right now on trying to find those companies that are putting up those triple digit growth rates right now, because the customers don't even need to be sold on the need for the product. They're just eager to get their hands on the functionality as fast as possible. And so, man, that's the real differentiator for me right now in terms of the types of companies I like to focus on.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Is it because we're maybe society has evolved to really expect this type of technology now and as soon as possible?
Well, I think it has to do with the fact that, let's give the former our former selves a ton of credit in terms of building a lot of infrastructure that we're now able to utilize to both build new products a lot faster than we ever were in the past. And we now have the ability to sell and distribute those products a lot faster than we ever had in the past. You know, it's kind of funny to think about, but when I first started in venture capital, a lot of startups didn't have things like CRM systems. People didn't know what product-led growth was. The way that you used to sell stuff was used to take out large enterprises to big steak dinners. And then after like 3 to 6 months of like wining and dining, you would then make a sale. We now talk about portfolio companies that operate on, you know, 30-day and 7-day sales cycles now. They do this through a lot of demand generation, which is something that is also pretty, you know, relatively novel. It's like maybe a decade, 2 decades old. And then through structured demand generation, they go through structured marketing activities, and then they're able to then have these super high NPS scores that turn all their customers into evangelists. And so they start doing the sales cycle for you. You combine all that stuff together and you're able to put together some really interesting growth rates that are still very capital efficient. And that's something that we haven't seen. It's something that we're starting to see more and more of. We've definitely seen it before. We definitely saw it in like, call it like the 2018 to 2021 timeframe. But in that timeframe, we saw it with like lots and lots of cash paying armies of people to make a lot of phone calls on your behalf. You know, in 2023 and 2024, we're starting to see this happen just based off the pure power of the product, the customer adoption cycle, and us just being super smart in terms of our interactions with potential customers. There's a lot to unpack there if you want me to go through it, but I just couldn't be more excited about kind of where startups are right now in terms of those types of cycles.
Yeah, it does sound like that is the goal, is to find that perfect technology for that perfect industry with the, you know, customer base ready to go and ready to buy in. But in terms of, you know, software in general, I feel like we've maybe even are a little sick of this AI revolution that's happening, but yeah. If we were to look even at AI specifically, or even bigger than that, what sort of trends and new technologies get you excited and hope to see like in potential portfolio companies?
Yeah, I mean, AI is super interesting right now. In a lot of ways, because of AI's ability to do work that we previously couldn't think of systems doing before, in a lot of ways, it helps recategorize a lot of service companies as being tech-enabled service companies, and it helps tech-enabled service companies become more product-oriented. The way that us venture capitalists and investment bankers used to categorize between those three buckets, services, tech-enabled services, and product companies, was we used to look at the gross margins for these businesses. You know, if you were sub, call it like 45, 50%, you were considered a service business. If you're between, call it 50% and 70%, you were a tech-enabled service business. You know, if you're 80% and up, you used to be considered a product company. What we've seen over the last 12 months is that a lot of AI technologies have allowed a lot of companies to move up a category. Because you're able to automate, and because you're able to work a lot more efficiently. And because of that, we've seen companies just make that jump up. And so that's a trend that we're super excited by. It's super interesting because it really opens up the avenues to scalability. Because, you know, in a lot of those cases, the folks that were doing the work that AI is doing were super resource constrained. And now you're a lot less resource constrained now. And so that's super interesting and super exciting. Now, the caution I'd give for a lot of those AI technologies is everyone is looking at AI as a potential solution for a whole range of problems. And so for me as an investor that's very focused on product market fit, part of the job that I'm trying to do is to distinguish between what I consider to be experimental POC uses of technology versus like, you know, recurring repeatable uses of technology. And so, you know, as excited as I am about the implementation of a lot of this AI stuff, I'm very cautious in terms of just making sure that I'm investing in the recurring stuff as opposed to the experimental stuff. You have to keep, you know, both sides of that equation in mind when you're looking at a lot of this stuff.
Do you feel like AI has a specific potential to disrupt specific industries more than others? Is that something you're thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I would look at any business that we previously thought of repeatable, mundane tasks that we thought had to be done by a human. And I would say, hey, you know, for those repeatable, mundane tasks, let's unlock all of that stuff that, you know, AI can potentially help us out with so that we can then use our people to do the more interesting stuff. And so, that that's the reason why we're talking about those gross margins improving by so much at so many of these service-oriented companies. It's basically like, think about like how many businesses have these large call centers in which people are just kind of reading down like a tree. Think about all the businesses that require people to just basically fill out forms like, you know, rote. Think about the businesses in which folks have to like do something that's super templatized in terms of writing. Think about like all of those types of categories where you have these things that require some intelligence, but maybe not so much creativity. And you can start to apply AI to a lot of those technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've been seeing this like Grammarly ad during all the March Madness basketball games. And I'm just like, I want that. That's good marketing.
Yeah.
not that I would use AI for my writing so much, but like for emails, that'd be great. What about trends within venture capital? Obviously, it's been a tough time for VC. And I think a lot of people were looking for more of the same in 2024, but we're a quarter of the way in. How have things been going from your perspective? Is it, what's happening in 2024 what you expected?
Yeah, so, you know, to be clear, 2023 was a real tough year. I don't want to linger too long on it, but I just want to be very open about the fact that, you know, if you're an entrepreneur in the year 2023, that was the hardest fundraising environment in a few years. And so, you know, the part of the reason why I'm in this business is because, you know, my whole goal is to help entrepreneurs. And so you can't help but, you know, just feel, you know, some sympathy for folks who are kind of going down the fundraising path in that year. I still think that a lot of great companies got funded, but in general, you know, the volume numbers were way down. My expectation is that in the year 2024, you may start to see some relief there in terms of the volumes of deals that are getting funded. We've seen some potential for some improvement there. Specifically, Peter Walker over at Carta, he published some data on capital calls, showing that we're back above $1 billion on the capital call front. For those who don't know, the way venture capitalists get their money is we pull our money down from our investors in the form of what are called capital calls. We're not sitting on a bank account full of a gajillion dollars to immediately deploy. We have to ask for the money from our investors. And so the folks over at Carta are reporting that those capital call numbers are increasing, presumably because those dollars are then turned around and then distributed to startups. So you might see some green shoots there, but overall the environment is still pretty constrained. Interest rates haven't budged. And we're starting to see the potential for some IPO activity. You know, the Reddit IPO just came out and that looks pretty good. If we see like a few more of those, maybe we'll see some green shoots kind of emerge there and we can start to see the end to this, you know, contractionary period for liquidity. Something that, you know, a lot of folks talk about is the fact that in 2023, liquidity produced by venture capital funds was down. And it was because that liquidity being down, we weren't necessarily putting a lot of money back in our investors' pockets. And so therefore, it was harder for us to then access funds that we could then turn around and invest in startups. And so, you know, with some of this new IPO activity, hopefully we'll start to see some green shoots there.
Yeah, I always wonder when IPOs are down, are other types of exits happening or just it's a pretty much a stalling across the board?
I mean, the IPO, at the end of the day, like, you know, if I quote like Bill Gurley over at Benchmark, I mean, that's the real, you know, that's a big, huge impact on our startup ecosystem are the IPOs. The M&A activity is also super important. But, you know, I think what we've been running into is that because IPOs were stalled out, The M&A activity was occurring, but the price points for the M&A activity were relatively depressed. And so because of that, we weren't, as an industry, just producing as much liquidity as we probably should have, as we previously were doing. And so as a result, it was just creating that contractionary market just all across the board. With that said, though, I mean, you know, as you've seen, Mercury has had some exits, you know, here in the Houston marketplace, and we're excited about those. And we continue to be excited about, you know, M&A activity happening across this year. I tentatively think that we're going to see more M&A activity this year than we saw last year, as expectations for those price points come closer to the prices people are willing to pay through that recalibration that happened last year on where pricing should land on these types of deals.
Well, you mentioned, you know, obviously Mercury has had some exits. How is the rest of the portfolio looking, and how are y'all helping your portfolio companies get through this tough time?
Yeah, I mean, so we were pretty early coming out to our portfolio companies. I want to say, like, at the beginning of 2022, we basically came out and we said, hey guys, like, we think that a contractionary market is coming. And so because a contractionary market is on the way, here are some steps that we think you should be taking in order to prepare for this contractionary environment. You know, those steps included, you know, focus on reducing your burn ratio. Think about your customers in terms of where can you get, like, repeatable revenue from. You know, it was a real back to basics type of attitude that, frankly, I thought was very helpful for companies in general. You know, to prepare themselves for their futures without venture funding as well. So we were basically telling them to do a lot of right things to become much more capital efficient. With that said, you know, in the year 2023, we had a number of companies, you know, be able to go to market to raise money, and they were able to raise money with those capital efficient mindsets. And because that's what the market was looking to fund, they were able to do well in terms of raise money to continue their growth trajectories. I think something you hear a lot, and we definitely talk about this a lot within our portfolio, is trying to adhere to the rule of 40. That's a concept in which you're trying to combine the growth rate against, like, the expense ratios within a company to kind of prepare it for its eventual exit. And so that's something that we've been very focused on for our portfolio. And so generally speaking, I'm just very proud of how our portfolio was able to react to the warnings we were giving them back in 2022, so that we could prepare for this world of 2023 and 2024.
Yeah, I think it's also pretty telling that not only did Mercury's portfolio do well during this time, you guys also raised Fund 5,
yeah,
arrived $160 million. So what was that process like? Why is that so meaningful to Mercury?
Look, I mean, it was a double down by our limited partners. When venture capitalists talk about limited partners, we're talking about the investors in our fund. And we really were, you know, very heartened to see that our investors were really excited about what we had put together with our fourth fund, and wanted to see more of the same with the fifth fund. In addition to that, as I mentioned earlier, they were very excited about the fact that we were focusing on these product market fit companies. We call them internally mature A's, but these are companies that are still relatively early in their life cycle, but have really hit their stride in terms of acquiring customers in a capital efficient manner. And so we wanted to double down on investing on those types of opportunities and kind of see what 2024 would give us, because we knew that there was a number of these companies that were looking for funding, and we wanted to be able to fill in that gap.
Yeah, I know you've already made some deployments from that fund too, which one was Repeat MD, which you brought up, and they've joined the podcast before because they're Houston-based.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, they're great. What else can you tell us about deployments you've already made?
Yeah, so another company that I help out with that's actually led by my partner, Adrian Fortino, is Code Health up in Michigan. Code Health helps in the medical coding space. Which is something that almost exclusively was done on premises at hospitals before the pandemic. But now hospitals are open to a remote working model. And so Code Health helps those companies fill in for medical coding using a more distributed platform. So these are all medical coders that are all still in the United States, but they're all working with their health partners to be able to provide that service in a much more efficient, faster, accurate manner. And that's a company that has grown by leaps and bounds and is a poster child for this mature A strategy that I was talking about.
Well, I know this year seems to be going to expectation for you. What do you see the rest of the year entailing in terms of VC activity, you know, startups being able to raise funds, the IPO market, the positive?
I'm definitely keeping my eye on this IPO market. Like I said before, I thought the Reddit IPO was very healthy. I think you're seeing the market wanting to see more and more of those types of filings. And that just makes me really excited. Because if we can get a number, let's call it like a dozen of these across the line, then we are restarting that capital cycle I was talking about earlier, in which we can start to return more cash back to our limited partners. And our limited partners will reward us by giving us, by allowing VCs to close more funds so that we can deploy more capital. And so I just think that that IPO market starts that whole process up again. The Fed could help us out with an interest rate cut. I think the current projections for those are that, we might be able to see the start of that in the second half of this year. If we can see that happen, that would be super exciting as well, because that helps loosen the purse strings, especially for M&A activity, because then debt gets a lot cheaper for folks to finance these purchases. I'm definitely keeping an eye on both of those to kind of help inform my point of view in terms of how 2024 will work out. But generally speaking, you're not in this business if you're not an optimist. And so I'm looking forward to seeing more activity relative to 2023.
Yeah, I guess you do have to have the glass half full type mentality. So are you looking at any specific tech trends aside from the VC activity? Any types of technology you're really keeping
close? Yeah, sure. So, the three areas that I've invested in the most probably over the last, 2 to 3 years have been security, have been, let's call it like healthcare-related IT, and then vertically focused SaaS. And all three of those actually benefit from the current advances that we've been seeing, both on the AI front and on the data front. Frankly, in terms of the economy, in terms of the growth of the overall sectors. And so there's we call those tailwinds. But the idea is that those are all areas that are super, super exciting. As I mentioned earlier, AI gives us the ability to take things that were previously services and turn them into products. That's super exciting stuff. On the data front, we've never been able to process more. And so turn those into actual actionables that actually help customers out are super exciting stuff to make things from a customer point of view as simple as possible. That's super exciting to me. And then, we don't talk enough about how much the economy has truly transformed in the last 4 to 5 years. And so being able to take advantage of those TAM tailwinds is a big deal for me. Taking advantage of the fact that, a lot of industries are now working remote and are not coming, and are going to stay remote. That's a big deal to me. Taking advantage of the fact that, we suddenly have employers who are much more focused on trying to build a better experience for their employees. That's super exciting to me. Talking about how we live in a world in which, because AI has made the generation of phishing emails and sophisticated cyber attacks much easier, means that we have to do a lot more from a cybersecurity point of view. That's super exciting to me as well. The world is awash in these types of structural opportunities that are kind of out there that I think that, startups have a big role in helping solve.
Yeah. How do you stay up to date in these industries? Because I know you are out and about a lot. You were just at South By. How do you stay in touch with all the trends and what's happening in both tech and VC?
Man, this is definitely a game for what I call like the intellectually curious. If you ever look at me, if you ever stop by my office, you'll see that like I'm either like reading like a newsletter or a publication. We have a lot of great folks here on the investment team at Mercury that are also helping kind of keep me up to date. We have a whole stable full of CEOs that are running some amazing companies, and they're constantly telling me about what they're seeing. And look, we take a lot of pitches here from a lot of folks who are a lot smarter than us. Who are at the vanguard of what their industries are trying to do. And, that helps kind of inform our points of view as well. We talk to investment bankers a lot in terms of the types of trends that they're seeing. I mean, it's a whole constellation of things that kind of help keep us fully up to date.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about, because you do Mercury, obviously is based in Houston, but y'all do deploy capital to startups in overlooked markets like Houston. How is Houston comparing to the markets y'all are active in, and how have you seen Houston evolve over the years?
Yeah, man. I've been a venture capitalist in Houston since 2008. What a world that has changed here. If you were in Houston back in 2008, I think your first stop, your maybe even your only stop would have been like the HTC, the Houston Technology Center, in terms of trying to find a concentration of startups. If you look at Houston today now, it's very multifactorial. If your focus is on like energy, you got Greentown Labs and the Ion. If you're looking for software startups, you can stop by the Canon. Healthcare startups, you have all of the amazing activity happening at TMCX. What I've loved the most about Houston and how we've evolved is we've kind of come to peace with the fact that we're always going to be a multifactorial city that's diverse in interest and diverse in opportunities. We're not hyper-focused on trying to recreate compact computer, which was the big unicorn of the 1980s that came out of this market. Instead, we're just trying to find the businesses where Houston has unfair advantages to succeed. And those come from healthcare companies taking advantage of the med center. Those come from energy companies that are focused on the energy transition. Those come from software companies taking advantage of the large concentration of customers we have on the enterprise software front. And so, because of that constellation, you can start to see some super interesting things start to emerge out of the Houston ecosystem that probably were impossible 20 years ago. A great example is a company that my partner Blair invested in here called Cart.com, which is, really looking at reinventing e-commerce for major brands. For the guys over at Cart.com, I mean, talk about like the ultimate Houston story, right? It comes from the founders from Blinds.com, which was previously a Houston startup. They spent their early days at the Canon, kind of working with a bunch of other software startups. They were able to recruit out of Rice and like a bunch of like, the education partners down here. Very early in their life cycle, they acquired some companies. The first major acquisition was out in Beaumont, which is not too far away. Just a really fantastic Houston story that kind of takes advantage of a lot of the infrastructure that had been built up over the last 10, 15 years. And so that's why I'm just so high on the Houston market, because we just have a lot of very talented people, a lot of opportunity, a low cost of living, and man, just the sky's the limit in terms of what we can do here.
That's amazing. And yes, Cart.com is such a unique Houston story. And they were also, Omer was also on the
Oh,
podcast before. So
fantastic.
your plug-in episodes. So now people listening can definitely go and learn more if their interest has been piqued. Well, Aziz, thank you so much for this. I love your optimism. It's so refreshing, and also a lot of good information you've shared into the VC world and the software world. So thank you so much for sharing.
No, thanks so much for having me. Houston is not just where I grew up, it's my home by choice. Man, I couldn't be higher on the opportunities that we have here, and love to see this ecosystem continue to grow.
I think a lot of people can agree with that sentiment.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.